This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, February 18th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hartz. All 80 passengers survived yesterday's Delta crash in Toronto, all 80 people on that airplane. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But first, discussing finances with your adult children is essential, but revealing too much could affect their motivation and perception of money. It's important to find the right balance and what you share. We welcome in Tony Orgorek, founder of Orgorek Wealth Management in Buffalo, New York. Tony, thank you for joining us today. We had a conversation yesterday on the Noon Business Hour. It's as you no doubt have been hearing, very bitterly cold temperatures have settled in on the Chicago area. And yesterday we said, well, it's very cold out and you have the day off of school and chances are your parents are off of work. So why not have a conversation about money? And that conversation about money, teaching kids good financial habits, could include a little bit of a discussion about your own personal finances, how much money comes in, what your expenses are. But at the same time, if you talk about your own finances and maybe overshare with your kids, you could be teaching them the wrong type of lesson.
Well, Rob, I think it's one of the great things a parent can do for a kid is to give them a dose of reality. And oftentimes they don't understand just what it costs to run a household and what their expenses are like, is that as soon as you step out of the house, it's going to cost you money. So I think that's something, it's a really valuable lesson to help kids get oriented and also to understand that at some point, they're going to have to be financially independent and they're going to have to find a way to make a buck. Otherwise, life is going to be tough for them.
And it seems like, though, there's you can overshare in each direction and teach the wrong lesson. If you are doing well financially, the lesson that your child could take away from that conversation is not how expensive a household is to run. It is, oh my goodness, the bank of mom and dad is flush. On the other hand, if you're talking about how it's kind of a struggle to make ends meet on a monthly basis, they may internalize that anxiety.
Yeah, I think there are two, you know, aspects you're going to look at this with. For people who've got, who are financially secure, I think it's important to impart your values, how you ended up getting that money, how hard you may have had to work, how innovative you may have had to be in order to get to where they are, and also instill what the value of a buck is. One of the dangers is that, you know, one spouse ends up talking badly about the other one. I make it all, someone else spends it all. I think you want to stay away from that. For people who are doing less well off, I think it's important for them to explain some of the financial struggles they've had and the fact that they want their kids to have a better life. Maybe they need to focus more on a trade, on education, something like that. But they're not going to be able to help them much. The kids are going to be able to are going to really have to help themselves.
Yeah, you also bring up a very good point, too, about how you have this conversation and how you couch all of your observations. Because, yes, adults could be very cynical about their personal situation. They could let some resentment about their partner come through. They could let some resentment about their career leak through. And once again, the wrong lesson is learned.
And, you know, Rob, one of the things I think we all need to appreciate is the fact that, you know, kids see a lot more than they hear. You can tell them whatever you want, but they see how you act. They see how you handle money. They see disputes that are happening in the home. And I think it's important for them to be able to understand what's going on and try not to be accusatory. Try to diffuse things. Try to explain things rather than just saying someone's right or someone's wrong.
Tony Ogorek, founder of Ogorek Wealth Management in Buffalo, New York. Thank you for joining us today, talking about how you can have what's the right amount to share with your kids when you're talking about your own personal financial situation. Coming up, all passengers survive as a Delta jet flips upon landing in Toronto, highlighting the aircraft's durable design. We'll go in depth.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Miraculously, all passengers survived as a Delta jet flipped upon landing in Toronto, showcasing the aircraft's resilient design. Joining us to discuss is Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And the video and the images that have been posted on social media from this flight that flipped over yesterday upon what appeared to be a hard landing at Lester Pearson International Airport in Toronto is truly remarkable on two fronts. One, just the sight of the overturned aircraft itself, and two, the fact that everybody on board survived. Some people were injured, but this was a crash that literally everybody could walk away from.
Oh, I echo that, and we always say that airplanes are extremely fragile pieces of equipment, unlike trains and things, which can be built for high impact collisions, especially the newer cars. Airplanes, we don't see this often. I think it is a real testament to the engineering we're seeing. Not only the fuselage, you know, which completely stayed intact without the wings, without the tails, but also the seats. So this plane, you know, is upside down, some high impact, and the seats stay affixed. And those are all credit the FAA for those requirements.
And I read somewhere this morning that the requirements for seats on airplanes per the FAA is that they have to withstand 16 times the force of gravity. So it takes an awful lot to it would take an awful lot of physical force to dislodge those seats from their location.
That's right. I don't remember an accident quite like this where passengers were, you know, horrifyingly suspended upside down in that airplane. But the seats are indeed designed for that. And the reason it's not higher is the human body can only stand so much G-force to start out with. So they're really well designed in that respect. We still don't have a lot of details of how people got out of those seats, perhaps helped. But it's remarkable. All this work together with the plane, it had a fair amount of fuel on it as well. So that adds to the impressiveness.
And the investigation is underway. And of course, this is a the plane and the crew are working for a subsidiary, Endeavor, which operates those regional jets under the Delta flag. So everybody involved grateful for the fact that there was no loss of life and that this unfolded the way that it did. However, for the airline industry, this has been a very trying month, Joe, between this latest situation in Toronto, the fatal accident that happened at Reagan National Airport, and then the medical flight that fell out of the sky in Philadelphia, all of which accompanied by dramatic video. If you are in the airline industry right now and you're trying to reassure the flying public, what do you say? I mean, do the numbers really speak louder than these videos that are being posted around on social media?
I do. I think the run we had of no fatalities, the public really appreciates how safe this industry's come. Of course, the last few weeks have shocked people. There will be some effect. But I think what is pretty scary for the airlines right now is one, we're seeing a pattern here. Then maybe we're missing something in our safety requirements. All these accidents have different problems. But nonetheless, it's quite a string. And we could see some sort of FAA action to reduce, increase spacing at airports or ground planes for testing. And we've all been through that with the Boeing 737 MAX, how it can just devastate the airline operation when we have safety recalls and so forth. So it could be a tough couple months ahead.
Now, we have spoken at length about how there are more commercial planes in the sky today than at any other point in the history of commercial aviation. I mean, more people are flying today than ever before. And is this simply just a law of averages situation where you have more planes in the sky and as a result, the just by sheer numbers, the probability of an accident goes up along with it?
Oh, exactly right. And it's, the numbers are just impressive. I mean, 0.5 accidents per million departures in the U.S. and Europe, which is just a tiny fraction of what it was, say when I worked in the airline business several decades ago. And also, a couple of these accidents mostly are involving, of course, the Reagan accident in smaller planes. And we do know that the regional jets don't have quite the safety record of the larger mainline planes. Airlines are moving toward the larger planes, but I think we see that there is safety in size, unfortunately, and airlines are moving toward those larger equipment.
I was going to say, not to get too geeky, but 40 years ago, some of these routes that are now handled by the regional jets, that used to be a 727. And are we seeing that, the fact that, we have these smaller planes running more frequency, and that would kind of increase the rate of accident?
It has. And, airlines love to provide nonstop service from these cities. We saw the Reagan accident was a Wichita to Reagan flight, which is a fairly obscure route. But we're seeing a lot of that overflying, we call it, where they bypass the hubs. But the model isn't working so well for those flights with pilot salary, pressure, fuel costs, limitations on gates. So we're seeing few of those regional jets, but there's a lot of them out there. And we saw here in Toronto that the safety specifications are pretty impressive, but they're still not quite up to what the mainline jets are.
Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
YouTube just turned 20 years old, and in a relatively short amount of time, it has grown to dominate TV, streaming, and even podcasts. Joining us to discuss is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. May 24th, 1844, Samuel Morse sent via telegraph from Washington to Baltimore this message: "What hath God wrought?" Ushering in the age of radio, and all of a sudden, the world got a lot smaller. 20 years ago, Valentine's Day of 2005, "All right, we're here in front of these elephants." That was the first video on YouTube, and you might argue that was just as revolutionary as the invention of the telegraph and the wireless over a century ago.
I would agree that, "All right, we're just here in front of these elephants" video, by the way, just to put things in perspective, has 348 million views and still counting. I'm not suggesting that it's as interesting as that, but it's definitely a marker for anybody who streams content now. What they really are probably doing, thanks to YouTube, is streaming it on YouTube. YouTube has about 30% is the number one streaming category or streaming source. It has about 30 to 40% more streamers than Netflix, to put it in perspective. So yes, it's completely changed the landscape in lots of ways, including making literally tens of billions of dollars a year for its parent company, Alphabet.
And I think you can talk about it from a business perspective and how YouTube is making money, but it has also ushered in this era of open source media that I think we're all having a hard time trying to wrap our heads around, because the rise of do-it-yourself, even though it's has really impacted other studios as they try to wrap their heads around streaming, and maybe these multi-million dollar efforts that they are putting on their streaming services are nowhere near as much of a draw as somebody reviewing furniture on a YouTube channel.
That's exactly right. Now, you can decide as your own personal critic, whether or not that's a helps to our modern culture or not. But I will say this. In other words, all that stuff online isn't all good, at least from this one, you know, focus group of one's perspective. But I will say this. It has affected lots of things. Let's start with technology. To your point, huge companies, you know, you can include the giant providers like Comcast and others, have spent, as you said, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars on creating content, creating pipelines, and doing so with the expectation that it was all going to stream through a single device called television. But now, because, first of all, the streaming services can deliver it right to your pocket in your phone, that's changed in part because of the advance of the microchips and how fast everything is getting processed, no buffering anymore, and so forth. All of that's happened sort of in hand with YouTube's growth. And so in a nutshell, I think there are two major outcomes that I think are, in addition to the business side, that are hugely important. One is, how long are people willing to concentrate? Will they watch? I mean, I have lots of data. The average viewing time of a video on Facebook, you know, a Meta property, obviously, is 6 seconds. The average viewing time of a video on LinkedIn is 12 seconds. So what the expectation that we all have with the streaming and what YouTube has delivered is shorter attention spans. So longer profit margins and shorter attention spans is pretty much the outcome from this perspective.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, combining business and leisure travel and how it can enhance your work-life balance.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Chicago weather this week calling for dangerously low temperatures for the rest of the week. AccuWeather updates us with the latest. Next, top Russian and U.S. officials agree to work toward ending the war in Ukraine, but Ukraine not invited. It's Travel Tuesday. We'll share a growing trend that allows people to combine work with leisure. Plus, Elon Musk's startup rolls out a new chatbot as AI competition intensifies. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow down 72 points. The NASDAQ is down 68. The S&P 500 down 2. We have 11 11 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies. Feels like 2 below. Topping our news at the half hour is the weather. Chicago and the surrounding areas remain under a cold weather advisory as we deal with bitterly cold temperatures and wind chills below zero for the next couple of days. Let's get the latest now on this weather and when we can expect a warm-up from AccuWeather meteorologist Brian Thompson.
Well, Rob, there will be a warm-up as we get closer to the weekend, but so like you said, the next couple of days continue to look quite cold. Temperatures have been struggling to get much above 10 degrees as we've gone so far through the afternoon, and we won't see temperatures really rise a whole lot more, maybe another degree or two. That'll be about it. But high temperatures in the teens tomorrow. Some spots may get up near 20 by Thursday, and then as we get into the weekend, looks like we'll finally see temperatures get closer to the freezing mark, which will feel a lot better than what we have right now. Brian Thompson, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
U.S. and Russian officials met in Saudi Arabia to discuss ending the war in Ukraine without one of the major combatants. Secretary of State Marco Rubio led the U.S. delegation, Ukrainian officials not asked to participate in the peace talks. Rubio said he thought talks with Russia were a good first step.
I think it's important to have this meeting because we haven't really had much engagement with the Russians for almost 3 years. And it sets the table for future conversations. How that turns out will be up to the parties.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says his country will not accept a deal brokered without Ukraine present. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Ryan Dietrich, chief market strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And a rather muted start to the new trading week.
It is. You know, thanks for having me back, Rob. I mean, like you said, S&P is like virtually flat, like at the time we're doing this. Now, let's be clear. The S&P on Friday closed 0.07% away from an all-time high. So what I'm getting at, just the tiniest rally this afternoon. We could be looking at all-time highs, but again, we just had the weekend for a change. We didn't have a bunch of drama and news over the weekend. We've seen some big drops on Monday in the last couple of weeks or so. So it's kind of a nice change, just kind of consolidating and flirting with all-time highs. I don't think we should complain too much, Rob.
Now, you point out correctly, there has been a great deal of drama and just news over the past month. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a trademark of the Trump administration. There's just a lot of content out there for us to pick through, and that may lead to uncertainty. However, if you just followed the equities markets since January 20th, what story is that telling us?
Yeah, I mean, well, great question there, because again, there's lots of headline risk and lots of drama in the media, and everybody talks about it. We get it. You work in media, I work in media, so we're talking about it. But what's happened? I mean, listen, S&P's up over 4% so far this year. If you look at the 11 sectors in the S&P 500, all 11 are up on the year now, right? Seven of them are outperforming the S&P 500. In other words, this is a broad-based rally. Listeners might remember the Mag 7, only seven stocks going up back in 2003. That wasn't quite true, but a lot of that was, yes, tech did so well in 2023, that was a big part of why the stock market did well. Now, Rob, we've got a lot of groups doing well. That's called broadening out. We're seeing that this year, and we think it'll continue, and that's a really, I think, welcome sign for investors of a nice diversified portfolio.
Now, I will say the story stock of the day is Nike, which announced today it is keeping up with the Kardashians, and investors are rewarding it today. So they're teaming up with Kim Kardashian and her clothing line, Skims, I should say. Her name is Kim. The thing is called Skims, which, regardless of your feeling about the Kardashian family, Skims is an undeniable success.
You're right. It's funny. I literally just went to a sporting goods shop and bought my son 3 Nike shirts. So I guess I'm trying to help that today as well. But I guess the reality is that's company specific. That company's obviously struggled a good deal, so they're trying to recover. Let's talk about the consumer just for a second here. Last week, we got retail sales that came in a little bit weaker. But what did you just talk about before I joined? It's cold out there. It is cold outside. So I think the market's giving the consumer on those retail sales numbers last week kind of a pass because it is really, really cold. People aren't quite spending quite as much. Bottom line, the employment backdrop is still good. We got some good initial claims data last week. The labor market's strong. People are working. Incomes are still solid. It's still a strong consumer-led economy, and Nike is just one example of that as people continue to buy a lot of stuff out there. That's what we continue to see, and that's going to drive this economy forward and upward.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, blending business and leisure travel for a balanced, fulfilling experience.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. So-called leisure travel, as in business and leisure, is transforming business trips into family getaways, blending work and leisure for a smarter and more fulfilling experience. Joining us to discuss is Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, JetSetJulietTravels.com. Juliet, thank you for joining us today. And how does a so-called leisure trip differ from the good old-fashioned business trip where maybe you have a meeting in New York, but you also go to the Empire State Building during your downtime?
Well, to be honest, it kind of doesn't. No. Basically, it's just trying to flesh out that a little bit more by including potentially maybe more days there and possibly even going to different locations from there. I mean, this is something that I have always done because, if I'm going to go on a work trip, I want to get the best, I want to make the most of it. But a lot of people I know feel guilty, or if they've got family, so they want to come back home. But this is actually a trending thing. It is on the rise. Just to give you a little idea, Rob, according to Expedia, 3 out of 4 travelers say that they're more likely to turn their work trip into a vacation since the pandemic, which makes sense, right? I mean, we never want to be caught sitting at home again going, why didn't we take that trip to the Tuscan countryside when we had to go over and work in Florence? This is something that you really have to think about. Another travel organization says about 41% of us workers have taken a leisure trip in the last year. And that's up. And typically we're adding more days onto it, which I think is a unique thing. That's actually something that's different. We're adding like 2 to 4 days, whereas before we would add maybe 1 day. And we're also more likely to do this if we can bring a companion along, which makes sense. And by the way, Rob, Chicago, although it's 11 degrees there and not 60 degrees like it is in Charleston, where I am right now, and sunny, by the way, Chicago is a top leisure city. Obviously, it's a major hub with direct flights to major global destinations, not just here in the United States, again, but globally, Europe, the Caribbean, Mexico. So you guys are set there. And let's be honest, I mean, if you're already on the company's dime for a flight and hotel and maybe even per diem for food and drink, why are you going to rush back home? I mean, give yourself something to look forward to on your next work trip. That in and of itself, I don't know about you, Rob, if you have to do these work trips, but that's why I always try to turn my business trip into pleasure. I mean, it's the biggest reason. I want to have something to look forward to. And the fact that you can potentially turn some of it into a tax write-off is, definitely is helpful, depending, obviously, on your line of work, if the IRS is listening to me.
I was going to say, I mean, first off, way to rub it in about the weather in Charleston.
We did get snow here.
I know, and it was the end of civilization down south, I understand. So every region has a talent, but there has to be a point, though, at which the corporate accounting department there is a limit to their benevolence, I would imagine. I mean, the last business trip I took was to New York, and this was a couple of years ago, and I had some extra time, so I went and took in a taping of Late Night with Seth Meyers, but those tickets are free, and I also paid for my dinner afterward, but how much is too much when it comes to your company paying for your leisure trip?
Well, no, I think it's perfectly reasonable to do your work. I mean, I'm not saying you have to sit there and daydream all day about when you're going to get out. It's 5 o'clock almost. I'm going to be at that Broadway show in a couple hours. But I mean, you can kill two birds with one stone. I think, a lot of us, we're having more challenges trying to get time off. I mean, things are hard. It's not easy. We're slugging along. And so we have to sometimes kill two birds with one stone. For instance, I have to go to Italy in April I have to do some more work for my YouTube travel channel. And I have to do more site inspections at hotels that I recommend my clients go to. So my husband, he gets 4 weeks or 2 weeks a year, really. And I said, hey, why don't you come with me? I mean, it's not like it's torture to hang out at the rooftop bar, you know, rooftop restaurant or rooftop bar when I have to, you know, do an interview or have a meeting with a person at that hotel. Just, you know, you can enjoy yourself, or he can be the guy that's sitting there when I'm doing a story on, you know, my favorite pasta carbonara. He could be the one sitting there, you know, that I'm shooting, eating it. I mean, there are ways to do this where you are killing two birds with one stone and you're not taking advantage of your company.
I'm just imagining your hubby, you know, at the rooftop bar just saying, will 5 o'clock ever come?
He's like, no, please. Are you kidding me? He's enjoying himself. He can't. When I show up, he's like, oh, wah, wah, wah. So I'm like, here's my iPhone, honey. Start recording.
Well, and if you want to have a bleisure trip in Chicago today, you can sneak out of your hotel and go on the Pedway. It's a brisk 45 underground.
I love Chicago. Chicago is my favorite city in the U.S. besides Charleston. I love it. And I miss it.
And if you love it on a day like today, you definitely love Chicago.
I do.
Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her online at JetSetJulietTravels. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, Elon Musk unveils Grok 3, a new chatbot rivaling ChatGPT and DeepSeek. We'll talk about it next.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Elon Musk has unveiled Grok 3, a new chatbot from his AI startup, aiming to rival China's DeepSeek, OpenAI's ChatGPT, and Google's AI offerings. Joining us with the latest details is Ina Fried, Chief Technology Correspondent for Axios in San Francisco. Ina, thank you for joining us today. And Elon Musk, a guy who's kept a rather low profile, especially over the last 4 weeks, coming out with Grok 3. And if you are an user of X, you see a button for Grok now as part of the X app on your phone or on a desktop. And how is this different from previous Grok models? And more importantly, I guess, for Musk, how is this different from the competition?
Well, we don't know totally, but, you know, they touted some benchmarks suggesting that not only is Grok 3 significantly better than Grok 2, but it also compares favorably on certain benchmarks to the other stuff that's out there, the rivals that you mentioned. So to be taken with a grain of salt until we really get to play around with it, but significantly better than Grok 2, supposedly, and perhaps rivaling some of the other ones out there.
Now, Musk did tout a bid to purchase OpenAI. Is that just Elon Musk talking and trying to attract attention to himself, or is this a case of him trying to eliminate a competitor?
Well, I don't think he's really going to be able to. I'm not even sure he wants to. I certainly think he wants to slow down and disrupt OpenAI. He's sued them a couple times. He's proposed that 6-month pause on AI development. So I think definitely the Elon Musk strategy when it comes to AI is keep building as fast as you can and do what you can to slow down rivals. I do think, you know, the OpenAI thing, there's more drama to come, but I don't think it's going to end up with Elon buying them.
And then what are the use cases that we're really seeing as far as, you know, business productivity tools? How is Grok or Claude or OpenAI and ChatGPT, how are they showing up in a practical way?
So when it comes to business use, I think OpenAI is really sort of in the lead, and Anthropic also has a significant business. Grok strikes me for the moment as more aiming for consumers. As you mentioned, it's right there in the X, formerly Twitter app. They did announce a deal, I think, with Anduril, which does technology for governments and militaries to use Grok. But really, OpenAI with its API and then Anthropic, Claude is pretty well regarded. And what businesses are trying to do is streamline things. So it's really good at coding. These AI bots are really good at customer service tasks, so automating some of those. And I think where businesses are getting stuck is trying to apply it to the broad workforce. I think that's still how does the average knowledge worker use them is still an open question.
Ina Fried, Chief Technology Correspondent for the news site Axios in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of the Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.